welcome back to Grazia Life Advice. It's great, as always, to have you with us. My name is Lottie Jeffs, and with me today is yet another inspirational woman. She's a writer who, at the 2020 British Book Awards, became the first Black woman to win Book of the Year for her novel, Queenie.
My name is Candice Carty-Williams. I'm an author and screenwriter, and I'm really excited to be on this Grazia Life Advice podcast.
Candice's new book is called Empress and Anea, and it's her first young adult fiction novel, billed as South London's answer to Freaky Friday.
Anaya goes to a private school. She has a really great set of friends, and they, you know, they have a nice time. And then Empress joins on a scholarship. She is from a very, very different background. And on the eve of their birthday, their 16th birthday, they, as a joke, do a sort of spell they found on the internet. And they wake up the next morning in each other's bodies.
Coming up, Candice has got so much to say about personal resilience and giving yourself the best chances in life.
You have to back yourself when no one else will. Like, you know, you are your only, you're your first support system. And I think that that is the key thing.
There's also some really candid reflection on mental health and how to know when you should stop trying to be strong.
When I finished university and then one of my best friends passed away, everything just hit me. And I was not able to, I mean, I wasn't able to do anything, but I definitely wasn't able to be strong. And there was such a disconnect when it came to me getting better.
I really took a lot from my chat with Candice, and I hope you do too. Hi, Candice. How's your day going so far?
I woke up with a bit of a cold, actually, Lottie. So I'm just taking it easy on myself. But yeah, I've been testing so much that my nose hurts, but I'm COVID free. Just have a cold.
I feel like we all have a cold right now. Like the entire United Kingdom is just sniffling away.
Yeah,
I do too. So yeah, it's weird. It just makes you realize like what it was like not being ill. I don't know about you, but like I just wasn't ill for like 2 years.
I know, it was amazing. It was a really good time.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, thank you again so much for being here today. And you have sent us through 6 pieces of great advice and one piece of less good advice, which we'll come to. So your first piece of advice, I think, came from your dad. Is that right?
Yes, that is right. That is one of the, I think, the only positive thing he has ever said to me, but it's always stuck with me.
And what is it?
It is, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Okay, and what do you think your dad meant by that? And then, I guess, follow-up question, what have you taken from that?
I think, I mean, he's a very literal man. So I think he literally was like, you have to vocalise what you want, else you're never going to get it. And I guess I've taken exactly that from it, because I'm quite a shy person, but also not someone who can very readily vocalize their needs or their wants. And so I have to always remember this, like, through my life, when I'm not happy with something or when I want something to change. In particular, I think the first time that I remember having to like say it to myself a lot was when I started the Guardian and Fourth Estate short story prize back in the day. So like a few years ago when I was working at Fourth Estate, and I was longing for change when it came to what we were publishing, because I was constantly searching for underrepresented authors and was just not seeing or finding any. And I basically went away, came up with the idea for this prize, and then had to come back and ask the publishing house I was working at, Fourth Estate, if we could do that. And I remember being really nervous, I guess, because it was quite a big, you know, it was a big thing at the time. It was the first initiative of that kind. And so being really nervous, but knowing that I had to ask for it, else change wouldn't come, you know?
Yeah. What do you think it is that so many of us find daunting about asking for what we want?
I think it's the fear of rejection, right? I think a lot of people who are very confident just assume they're going to get what they want. So just go into it. And I think the people who don't have that confidence either just settle with what they've got because they're scared that when they ask for what they need, they'll get a no. And that is scary. Rejection is really, really scary. And I think that kind of, well, I guess understanding that is part and parcel of being able to ask for what you need, just knowing that the answer might not be yes, but that's fine.
Yeah. And do you think there's another thing, maybe specifically or more so for women, in asking for what you want, which is like you don't want to come across as being too pushy.
Yeah, and I just definitely remember this sort of gender divide when I was when I would work in an office. Male and female colleagues who would ask for similar things were given very different labels. You know, there was confident versus assertive, or confident versus ambitious. And, you know, ambitious was never a positive thing, you know.
Let's move on to your second piece of advice, which is a promise is a comfort to a fool.
Yes.
Which sounds almost Shakespearean, but it was your mother.
Yeah. She used to say that to me when I was young. And I think she lives by that advice because she never promises me anything. And I think her thing was always like, you know, people will tell you that they're going to give you anything, give you the world, and they're not always going to do that. And that was really, really helpful to know. She was like, you just don't have to. I think her whole thing was like, don't believe people, which kind of sounds a bit cynical, but she's a really optimistic person. I think that realism is like the only bit of not negativity, but I guess the only bit of real life that snuck through her sunny disposition and outlook. And so now I don't really engage in promises, you know. And I'm sure that one thing that I've understood is that people can say they will do something or say they want to do something, and I think that they believe that they will when they say it, but I try not to hold on to those things.
So does that mean you also try not to make promises to other people?
I never make promises to people because I remember what my mum said. And I was like, I can say that I will do X, Y, and Z, and I will always try to do what I can, but I will never, ever, ever use the term promise, ever, ever.
I think that's really useful advice. So it's more like you'll say, I'll really do my best to get this done by this time or something, rather than I'll definitely do it.
Yeah. Or I'll be there if I can. And that's like one of the other big things, because like, I think one thing that in like, you know, lockdown obviously was a frightful thing, but it gave us a lot of time to be still, to have to be still. And that was in a way quite a good thing for a few of us, because it meant we actually had to sit with ourselves and face the things that we were running away from, but also just like be by ourselves. I live by myself, so I was very much by myself for a long time. And then when life opened again and events were happening and parties were happening, and, you know, it was actually really overwhelming for me and also for many others. And so, yeah, it made me, yeah, just going out and having to do those things and say I would be there was always like, I now know that actually I don't want to do lots of things that I was just doing before. So yeah. I can just, you know, maybe that I'm not antisocial. I just really like to be in my house.
And I think that that's actually a really good way of phrasing it. I'll be there if I can, because the intention is there. You're grateful for the invitation. You plan to show up, but there's that thing of just never knowing how you're going to feel on the day.
Yes, very much so. That's like very much my thing. You know, I make lots of that. And I'm someone who tries to squeeze 17 things into a day. And I know that about myself. So I'm always like, just see what you can do. But yeah, in terms of like deadlines, I try and do those. Like, shout out to my weary editor. But yeah, it's very much I think also in relationships, that's one thing, or any kind of situationship or similar. I think that lots of promises are made, but actually you just don't know how you'll feel, and, you know, love and everything around it, that is ever changing. And so I definitely hold that in my heart, that idea of not, you know, people can promise you the world, and I do really think that they intend to fulfill that, but things change. When I say people, I mean myself as well.
It must feel extra good then when someone does fulfill a promise to you. That must be a good feeling.
It's a big surprise.
Yeah. Your third piece of advice is to back yourself. Can you talk to us a bit about this, and when you kind of, I guess, first really felt that it was something that you were doing?
Absolutely. I definitely, as someone who's like always had a lot of self-doubt, do you know what? I actually can't remember when this came to me or remember when I first started truly believing it, but I just, you know, always doubting that I'm right, or doubting, you know, we all do as women, I think, especially being like, oh, no, my appearance, or like, oh, my hair or my figure, or, you know, all of those things. But I think that you have to back yourself when no one else will. Like, you know, you are your only, you're your first support system. You know, your voice is the loudest voice in your head. You know, when we're always saying negative things to ourselves, what does that do to you? Like, what does that do to your ability to be confident? And I think confident is like the biggest thing when it comes to waking up in the morning, being able to look in the mirror and be like, okay, I've got this, I'm going to do this day. When it comes to working, when it comes to being around people, confidence is like the key thing. You have to know like who you are and what you bring to the table. And you can't do any of those things unless you really back yourself, you know? Like, you have to be your biggest supporter and your biggest fan. And it's, you know, I have a lot of people around me. I'm very lucky to have loads of amazing friends who are really supportive and really kind and really engaged in my work. And none of the amazing compliments they were giving me were sinking in because I just didn't back myself at all. And it was until I had to have a word with myself and also lots of therapy and learn how to properly back myself that any of this stuff would take.
It's so true. I think particularly over lockdown, just being stuck, I don't know about you, but with like this internal monologue the entire time, just rolling around and around in my head. Like for me, it was things like, oh, don't have a biscuit. Can't have a biscuit. You had toast for breakfast. Yeah. You know, like just inane kind of self regulation and judgment. And it just got so just infuriating and boring.
Yeah. Boring
and to not
is exactly
be around
right.
Friends that kind of can reflect back to you.
Yeah.
A different person.
It was about having that space and learning to just sit with myself and be kind to myself and just to be like, yeah, my cheerleader. That's really important.
And I'm interested that you said earlier that you identify as a shy person. Actually, confidence and shyness can coexist.
Yes.
I think you can be a shy, confident person, can't you?
Yes. I definitely am one of those, but that's taken, again, a lot of therapy, just to be able to walk into a room. And even if you're scared, be able to stay in that room and not run screaming. Also to be able to hold conversations with people and know what you bring to the table. I think that's super important. But yeah, the two are not mutually exclusive, but I've surrounded myself with a lot of confident extroverts who are in no way shy at all. And I love it. And I think I have gravitated towards all of those people because I need to be around it. Like, the majority of my friends are really outgoing and loud, expressive people who also know how to back themselves. And I would always look at them and be like, yeah, you should be able to be like that too.
Yeah. We're going to be back after this short break with more life advice from Candice Carty-Williams. We're back with Candice Carty-Williams, who is now going to share with us her fourth piece of life advice.
Yes. So this one, I remember, this came from Lettuce, who is one of my best friends. We were working together and I'd just gone through a really horrible breakup and I did not know how to be, because it was, you know, how you didn't, you never know how to be when you're going through a breakup. And I remember that she said to me, you need to handle this, which is one of the worst things, with grace and dignity. And I was like, yes, I do. But I wasn't not, but that was just like her initial piece of advice when I was about to go through it. And it was really, really, you know, breakups are really, really hard. I mean, I don't really remember the ins and outs of the relationship now, which shows you a lot. But I remember at the time just feeling quite chaotic and not knowing just how to handle it at all. And I didn't really have, you know, like, my mum was like, oh, you know, it's bad, isn't it? And so I didn't really have anyone who was like, you know, how do you move through it? And I don't think that there is anything, I mean, there's obviously no blueprint on how to move through a breakup, but just knowing that you handle things with grace and dignity is obviously the best way. And then actually I just remember carrying that through life and like other relationships or situationships or anything that I was in, and just wanting to be like, yeah, I don't ever want to do anything that means you can come back at me, you know. I'm just going to handle this in the best way that I can, even if inside I am screaming and I want to do and say terrible, horrible things. But yeah, I'm also just not that person anyway. But just knowing that, like,
yeah,
grace and dignity were my two friends that were going to walk me through.
Can we unpick those words a little bit, just to really understand what you mean by grace and dignity? Like, Yeah, I guess what do you think of as grace?
Grace to me is, I guess, patience, sensitivity and understanding, being able to rise above the situation. And dignity is also just being able to be strong in that too. And also to be, yeah, just to be dignified and to be like, I'm not going to stoop to a level that perhaps you are stooping to. You know?
It's good to remind yourself of those things. Grace and dignity. I like that.
Yeah.
Your fifth piece of advice, Candice, is that some people enter your life as lessons. And when you've learned the lessons, let them go. Let the people go. Let the lessons go.
Let the people go. Ooh. Let the people go. Yeah, that one has been amazing. Also, I was thinking about that the other day. So that kind of, I can't remember how it came to me, but I tweeted something similar the other day and lots of people responded to it being like, that's exactly right. So I know that a lot of us have been going through it. But I also saw that Mother Teresa had said something similar, not to draw comparisons between the two of us. But you know, she obviously what she's talking about in some ways.
Yeah. So how do you do that, like, in a kind way, do you think? Or how do you do that with grace and dignity? How do you let someone go?
I mean, letting people go is really, really hard. It's not easy. It's never easy. And it's, you know, it's friendships, it's romantic relationships, it's everything between the two. And I think it is just being kind and being communicative and basically being like, I need to not be in this for myself. And I hope that if you care about me, you will understand that. And I've done that and I've had that conversation a few times and it's never been taken well. But then I have to still, as I said, look after myself. And with all of those things I've had to walk away from, the people that I've had to let go because, you know, they've taught me something about myself or maybe something about the person or how the two of us do or do not work. And again, in any context, this isn't just relationships. This is also professional relationships. This is leaving your job. It's like, I, you know, when I've had to leave jobs, it's like, I've learned enough. I know what I need to know. And I also know that this isn't the space that is for me anymore. I'm done, you know? And so I think you have to know when it is right to leave. And I think there is always a good way to do that. You know, no ghosting. I don't believe in ghosting. I think ghosting is very unkind. So I think, yeah, communication is big key. If I had like a number 7 of like life advice, communication is key would be like, I guess that's like one of the overarching ones, I guess.
Because it comes through in all of them really.
Yeah. And I think like one of the things that I have been doing with my therapist is like thinking about radical honesty.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
That. Right. And so like that also feeds into having to, you know, very kindly absent yourself from a situation or a relationship by just knowing what's good for you and what isn't good for you. And I think that lots of people stay in situations or jobs or at parties for too long because
so true. I love that parties reference because it is all the same thing, really. Like, the thing that keeps you at a party when you're not enjoying it is the same thing that keeps you in a relationship when you're not enjoying it in a way. And I guess it's like people pleasing partly or fear of being judged again. Or
I think it's people pleasing and also just this thing that like it might get better. Things might get better. And I think that is, and that, you know, and if we're going to talk about in terms of parties, you're just like, it's not like it's some, you know, someone's crying in the corner, something's just smashed, someone's been sick, it's time to go home, it's not getting better. But in terms of people, it's like, you know, if you try and work through things as much as possible but you don't feel like that person is able to change or that person is able to hear you out in the way that you need, or also I think a lot of the time what happens is you change and the other person stays the same and you've learned that too. And so I think that is your cue to leave.
Yeah. And I think in terms of the sort of lesson element, it can take a while for that lesson to become clear to you, can't it?
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
It does. It takes a long time, but also I think it's fine. I don't think ever saying anything to the wheels fall off, but I think definitely see things through enough. And I think that you always know in yourself when it's time to go. And it can be a hard realization. but you know, I think you know.
Yeah, for sure. Your sixth piece of advice made me laugh, and I did relate to it a lot. Can you tell us what it is?
Back up your work. Back your work, please. I'm begging you. The amount of people that I've had to, I mean, like Carrie Bradshaw, she was obviously my first, you know, she was my introduction to this. I cannot remember which Sex and City episode, but I remember it very vividly. She lost all of her work because her very old Mac broke. And Aidan replaced it with a new one and she didn't like it because she was very ungrateful.
Spin-off Sex and the City podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just have loads of friends who call me up and they're like, oh my God, I think I've lost something. I think I've lost my work. And it's like, I can't help you. And you can't, I can't help you. And I want to help you, but I can't because you should have backed it up. And that sounds really mean, but I back up everything all the time. So when I'm writing any draft that I do, and I'm very old school, I write on just like your standard Microsoft Word, but I send versions of it to my another email address like every night, like when I finish a session, because that's, I'm smart. Like, even if I lose that like seven lines that I've tinkered with today, I will not remember them again. And so always back up your work. So yeah, back yourself and also back your work.
Have you ever had a disaster in that respect then, or have you always been good at doing it?
I've always been good at doing it because I'm such a belt and braces person, like just make sure, because I hate Lottie, I hate blaming myself for things. And so I always just try, and it's like if my computer broke and I couldn't get into my email address and everything went wrong, then I'd be like, at least I knew I did what I could.
Did everything.
And this is like, yeah, that's probably the most boring piece of advice probably ever.
I think it's probably the most like genuinely useful.
Yeah.
I've had the worst thing I've had is when I've done like celebrity interviews for magazines and it hasn't recorded.
Oh God.
That is like, I think that happened to me once, for then me to be like, every time after that, to be like, I'm going to record it on my iPhone, on my dictaphone, ask them to record it. Like, it was just so embarrassing and mortifying. But yeah, it definitely taught me a lesson.
Yeah, you absolutely have to. Yeah, I do that too when I'm interviewing people. I have it like, do you have the fear when you're doing the interview?
I've been doing that. I don't know if you've noticed me like looking down at my like recorder, but I've been like, is it recording? And then you know it's recording, but there's still that thing in the back of your head, like, maybe it's just stopped.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, it's really terrifying. So yeah, make sure you back your things up, people, because you know, you don't want to blame anyone.
Your worst piece of advice, Candice, can you hit us with that, please?
Yes. The worst piece of advice I've received, which I received a million times as growing up, was to be strong. And that hits differently for different types of people and for very different reasons. But I think that as a young black woman of any age really, you are told, or you have this idea that you should just be strong throughout your entire life. I heard it a lot when I was growing up. So when I was growing up, I was very sensitive. I'm very sensitive now, so I don't know why I said it like that, but I am very sensitive all the time. Now as an adult, I'm able to, like, I just respect that I'm sensitive, and I know that I'm sensitive, and everything is easier because I understand the emotional framework that I am within, you know. And I have really amazing friends who are good at being like, oh, this has happened, you know, like I have a thing with grief. And so like if someone, a celebrity has passed away and the timeline on Twitter is like awash with grief, I have amazing friends who are like, just so you know, this has happened. So, you know, like take care of yourself when you go onto Twitter, for example. Growing up though, the advice from my family was always just to, they recognize my sensitivity, but that was to them a weakness. And I should always just be strong because they had been strong and, you know, they were just coping fine. And it was like, yeah, no, I don't want to cope though. I want to be able to live. So I don't just want to, you know, I don't want to just exist my way through life. I want to be able to enjoy my life. And yeah, I think just from a young age, this is just this understanding, this prevailing understanding of black women that we are older than our years. Like I wrote an essay for this, collection and this story is Keisha the Skep, published by Murky Books, and it's a young black woman's story that was written years ago and was found and is being published. And in the essay collection, I talk about the hypersexualization of young black women. I was doing some research and there's anecdotal and like data-driven research that tells us that black girls are not seen as black girls from a young age, and their white counterparts are seen as young girls. Like, it's just, it's as cut and dry as that. And so, yeah, from like a tiny age, I was always having to listen to lots of my family problems, like, and you know, my dad would moan about like everything when I'd see him, and I would be affected by all of these things so deeply. And if I dared to say like, oh, I'm upset, I would just be told off, and I'll just be strong, like, just toughen up, right. Just toughen up and just don't worry about it. And also coming from a Caribbean family as well, big on like just saying your prayers and everything will go away. And it was just this relentless onslaught of just being this person that I just wasn't. And then, you know, you watch films and TV and black female representation, women are always strong and sassy. And I was like, I'm not any of those things. So I was always trying to find this. I was always trying to just sort of, I don't know, it was like a fictional version of myself that was like impenetrable and, you know, found everything funny or just didn't really, you know, wasn't really affected by things. And that was a nightmare. And then everything sort of, when I finished university and then one of my best friends passed away, everything just hit me. And I was not able to, I mean, I wasn't able to do anything, but I definitely wasn't able to be strong. And there was such a disconnect when it came to me getting better, because I kept trying to uphold this idea that I was really strong. And I know now, 10 years later, that I should have just, well, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing, but I should have just been like, yeah, I'm struggling because I'm not as strong as everyone says I should be. And no one really is. Like, who really is, you know?
Yeah. To just, and that must have just taken such a lot of unraveling to get to the place of realizing that you had carried with you this idea of having to be this strong person for so many years. And it sounds like the death of your friend was obviously the watershed moment for that.
Absolutely.
But even still, you must have been sort of battling with that at the same time, of thinking like, there's something wrong with me for allowing myself this grief or allowing myself these feelings, and which would have made a already really upsetting situation even more difficult to deal with, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. And I started having, I mean, I started having panic attacks, which was like such a physical marker of feeling unwell or feeling overwhelmed or feeling frightened and afraid. And I remember saying to my, I remember telling my dad, who again, we know is not, you know, he's Jimmy. He gave one good piece of advice and that was it. but I remember saying to him, you know, I keep having these things where I can't breathe and I can't, you know, I just feel like everything's sort of spinning and I can't eat and I can't sleep and everything is. And he said, just be brave. And then I spoke to my sister, my bigger sister, about it, maybe like a year later. And she said, oh, you know, dad used to have panic attacks when he was your age. And I was like,
really?
What the hell? Yeah. And so like, rather than say to me like, oh, I had those, you will be okay, it will get better, the advice given was like, just toughen up. And be brave and be strong. And, you know, you just, yeah, as you say, like, you just end up making things so much worse. I've been like, things are bad and there's something wrong with me and I'm not coping with it the way that everyone else obviously would be able to, because everyone else is just tougher than me and everyone else is stronger than me and life is really hard. You know, I'm just drowning and everything. So, yeah, it's really tough.
I try with, I've got a kid who's 3 and it's interesting. Like, I've been sort of telling myself of like, not stopping her from feeling stuff when she's feeling it, but also not indulging it when it's like completely irrational, because she's 3, right? So a lot of it is like just mad. But I'm really trying to like bring her up in a way where she knows that like, if she's feeling sad or disappointed about something, that's okay. Like, she's I'm not scared of those feelings in her, as her one of her mothers. I'm like, okay for her to feel, because I think sometimes that sort of idea of being brave, you also feel like you have to do it for other people.
Oh,
like,
it's
you're scared
for other people.
Of what will happen to your parents or your friends if you do allow yourself to just be vulnerable and let it all go.
100%.
I'd like my daughter to grow up feeling like I was robust enough to cope with her feelings.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm getting it right. Trying my best. And on the subject of influencing younger generations brings us smoothly onto the launch of your new young adult book. Can you tell us what it's called and a bit about it, please?
Yeah, so Empress and Anaya is about two young girls, obviously. I'm big into astrology, so they're both Pisces. And they're kind of different sides of Pisces. So you have Empress, who is, what would we call her? She is, they're both empathetic, but she is the sort of tougher Pisces who has had to, I guess, be strong throughout her life for reasons that are shown in the book. And we have Anaya, who is, she's given the space in her life because of, you know, her parents have money and have status. And so she's given that space to be able to be caring and to look out for herself, but also for others. And Anaya goes to a private school. She has a really great set of friends and they, you know, they have a nice time. And then Empress joins on a scholarship and she is from a very, very different background. And on the eve of their birthday, their 16th birthday, they, as a joke, do a sort of spell they found on the internet. And they wake up the next morning in each other's bodies and they have to hide this from, well, from Anaya's parents. Empress's mum is not around in the way that a parent would or should be. And they've got to exist in the other's experiences and live their lives through the others. And yeah, it's really fun. It's really fun.
It and sounds I really love brilliant. Writing it. I can't wait to read it, and I'm surely there's going to be an adaptation of it because it just sounds so ripe for TV or film. So thank you for writing it, and thank you so much for talking to us today on Grats Your Life Advice. It's been really lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much. That was really nice. It was so nice.
Yeah, it was nice to chat. Candice Carty-Williams, thanks again so much. The book out now is called Empress and Anaya. As ever, if you've enjoyed listening today, it really helps us out if you can like, share and review Grazia Life Advice wherever you get your podcasts. I'd be so grateful if you did. Thank you, take care, and I'll see you next time.